It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Happy First Amendment Friday from the Radio Northwest Network. We serve the Pacific Northwest, and on Fridays, we afford you the opportunity to sound off and actually exercise your Second Amendment rights. Well, your First Amendment rights, too. We support all the Bill of Rights, unlike the ACLU. Glad to have you with me today. We have a lot to talk about. And I want to invite you to the conversation at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. For our quick poll today, brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks, let them put it where you want it and save your aching back. Should the Congress sign off on killing some more California sea lions to protect Northwest fish? I would vote yes on that every day of the week. I think it's a fantastic idea. I'm betting I don't get a single naysayer because those sea lions are laying waste to the salmon in the Columbia River and the Willamette River, and that has an effect on the ocean fishing as well. So we'll talk about that. And if you want to vote in the quick poll, just go to LarsLarson.com. And while you're on the website, check out my trophy room, powered by Northwest Armory, and post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure and get the chance to win some great prizes. So that's on the agenda. The chair of the House GOP, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, who represents the Spokane area, is going to be joining us a little bit later on this hour. The House of Representatives has now passed the Pentagon budget, otherwise known as the NDAA. It has some good things in it. It has some bad things in it, but it does fund the military. And unlike the last 8 years, this will be the first year in 8 years that the White House has not automatically threatened to veto the National Defense Authorization Act, and that is a great change for America. How bad is the dam breaching problem in Washington State? We'll talk to Representative McMorris Rodgers about that. And I got to ask you this. Should a mother as careless as this have kids at all? In Springfield, the police came to the calls of other motorists who saw a woman, 27 years old, not drunk, dragging her small children behind her automobile in a roundabout in a small red wagon. And when the police pulled her over, she apparently told them she didn't see why she was being stopped, because she said, after all, I'm only going 5 miles an hour. At least one of the other drivers says he nearly collided with her car because she decided that the idea of childhood play was putting your kids in a wagon behind an automobile and then driving in circles at the roundabout. Should people that foolish and that irresponsible even have children at all? We'll talk about that. And why is one labor union being sued by the state attorney general of Washington? We'll talk to Maxford Nelson about that. And Portland. I've told you that government can screw up almost anything that's a good deal. Now, Portland, for a lot of years, has run hydro generators on its water supply at Bull Run. And they earn, for the electricity that they sell to the local utility company, they've been earning about $300,000 a year. They're about to sign a brand new deal in which they hire a company. They currently have PGE that oversees the dams and the hydro operation. They're going to hire a private company for $8 million over 5 years. It's a lot of money. And they're going to start losing money on this every single year. And they know they're going to lose money. How is it possible when you own outright a set of hydroelectric generators that generate many megawatts of electric power? How stupid and foolish do you have to be to lose money on that operation? So we'll talk about that as well. Homeless advocates are now challenging city camping ordinances, saying it's unconstitutional, that it's cruel and unusual to have rules against camping in public places. That case is before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most overturned appeals court in America, and we'll talk about that as well. Oh, and young Forrest Gump is going to join me. He is the actor who played the younger version of Forrest Gump in the famous movie. I know Tom Hanks was young Forrest Gump. So he's going to be in the studio with me today. You might be surprised that he did not pursue a Hollywood career after that. Instead, he went out and served his country, did a tour in Iraq, and he is now living in the Pacific Northwest, and he's looking for some opportunities here, too. We'll talk about that. In Everett, Washington, a teenage gang member identified as a suspect in multiple drive-bys and gun and drug charges, has simply walked away from custody. And we'll talk about why and how that kind of thing happens and get your opinion on the people who are running that system. And it is First Amendment Friday, so your phone calls and emails are welcome at 866-439-5277. We are live all over the Pacific Northwest, in Oregon and Washington, from the Canadian border to Northern California, from Idaho all the way to the Pacific. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
It's about time for police agencies to start doing a better job of warning their communities about sex offenders. Washington State does a lot of this in the form of public meetings. Oregon does not. In fact, consider these numbers. Oregon has 25,000 registered sex offenders. 2,500 of them are considered to be highly likely to reoffend. They're all required to register with police agencies, but many of them don't do so, even though the law says they have to. Oregon is only required to notify the public about 200 of those 25,000 sex offenders. The statistics show that most Oregonians live within a stone's throw of a convicted registered sex offender who's likely to do it again. And because the law doesn't require police agencies to act proactively, most of them simply do not. Now, I've been hearing about community policing for decades, mostly from the police. And this seems to be the most garden variety example of information that the police could push out to their communities, letting law-abiding citizens do what they can to protect themselves from the predators who may be living next door.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, I'm going to award the Daily Grill today to the state lawmakers in Washington State who have failed to fix the Washington Supreme Court's Hearst decision. That's the one that denies water wells to residents in mostly rural areas. You know, those lawmakers spent all their time talking about all the billions of dollars in additional taxes that they wanted to get instead of talking about fixing one very practical problem that is hurting an awful lot of people in their state, and they could have done it relatively easily, and they failed to do so, so shame on them. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com, comes in from Merle in Florence. Lars, after going into a dark corner and attempting to honestly compare the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, with the proposed health care plan, I am further convinced that Congress does not belong there. They are repeating errors made for decades, stirring up an otherwise sound profession and continuing in their combined efforts of wealth redistribution. These people cannot learn from history, and this will result, in my opinion, with the Republicans losing the House in 2018. With that, so goes any opportunity to drain the swamp. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you and glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. By the way, a brand new ethics investigation has been started into disgraced former Governor John Kitzhaber and his grifter girlfriend Sylvia Hayes. And yes, they just made the decision now. How much faith I should have in the Ethics Commission to actually do an honest look into that, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not really optimistic that they're going to go out and do what they really need to do. But at least the fact that they have voted to have a full-on investigation, it may not end with John Kitzhaber and Sylvia Hayes in orange jail jumpsuits, but we might actually find out more about the shenanigans that earned that couple a couple of $100,000 in influence peddling. And any day they want to come on this program and tell their side of the story, I'd be glad to have them on. Let's go to Jared in Amboy, Washington. Hey, Jared, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me on.
You bet.
I just want to know your opinion. I don't know if you've read this, but the Canadian government has just awarded a known terrorist, an admitted murderer of a United States Special Forces soldier, $10 million for wrongful treatment. I'm a Canadian. And I was really disappointed to see this, and I would just like to know what you guys on this side of the border have to say about it.
Omar Khadr. Yep. Is the guy they gave the money to. This happened, and I think they kind of tried to bury it because it happened. The award was made over the 4th of July weekend, which meant it wasn't going to get a lot of attention. This is the man who he pleaded guilty to killing U.S. Army Sergeant First Class Christopher Speer. I was so mad about this. Now, I had taken a couple of days off with the family. The grenade also did real damage to Sergeant Lane Morris, costing him an eye. And Khadr was then locked up. So 15 years later, the Canadian government apologizes. They did a formal apology from the Prime Minister of Canada to this guy, Omar Khadr, and they paid him $10.5 million in Canadian dollars. That works out to about $8 million in United States money. And they've apologized to this guy. So think of the message they're sending. One, we're not going to hold you responsible. I don't think a murderer should ever get paid off like that. So believe me, Jared, that's one of those that I was very upset about. But it's the Canadian government. I guess the Canadian voters get what they vote for.
Well, what scares me is the message that we're getting to, you know, the plenty Syrian refugees that we're bringing into our country. We're basically saying, hey, you can go over, you can kill a coalition soldier. We'll let you back in your country. You get to keep your Canadian citizenship. Oh, and we'll also give you $10 million once you've once we haven't treated you, I guess, properly.
But well, see, I'm glad you brought it up, Jared. I'll give my audience a little more info on this guy. Jared, thanks a lot for the call, and I'm glad to hear from a Canadian. In fact, we know we get north of the border. So if you want to dial in, it's 866-439-5277. Let me tell you about Omar Khadr. 15 years old. When he killed one U.S. soldier and blinded another one, he was born into a Muslim extremist family. He is the son of one of the people who helped finance Al-Qaeda. As a boy, Omar Khadr once stayed in Osama bin Laden's house. He went on to be the youngest prisoner at Gitmo. He also claims that his confession at Gitmo was coerced, and he does not know if he threw the grenade. Now, I would think that if I ever pulled the pin on a grenade and tossed it at some human beings, I think I'd remember that. Now, was he mistreated at Gitmo? Perhaps. The Canadian government got valuable information from Khadr, and they shared it with U.S. officials. And he has claimed that he will show Canada now that he's a good person. Well, I'll tell you what. Does a good person get involved with Al-Qaeda? Does a good person aid and abet the murder and the serious injury of American service members? How about he takes those $8 million and gives it to an appropriate charity? Well, I got to tell you something. The folks who were injured and the man who was killed, his family has received a damage claim of $134 million against Omar Khadr. Well, now Khadr has a bunch of money. So it should be interesting to see whether or not he can hang on to it, because I have a feeling the families of the service member who lost his life and the service member who was blinded might have a claim on some of that $8 million in American cash. Let's go to Lee. Hey, Lee, welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Yes, Lars, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have wanted your take on Muslim immigration. I'll try to be brief. As Christians, of course, we're not heard, and having another God before you is, you know, the mosque and everything else is uncomfortable to me. But my main point is, in their Bible, the Quran, it does say in there that if we don't believe in their Allah, we need to be killed. Likewise, any Muslims that, you know, don't agree with that. Now, my point is, what religious freedoms or rights do they have? I feel that they lose that entitlement with that very saying in their Quran.
Well, the problem with what you're talking about is the U.S. Constitution, except I don't see it as a problem. The United States government is not supposed to tell you what kind of religion to believe in or to believe in any religion at all. You have religious freedom. Now, if you act on those beliefs from the Quran and you go out and hurt people, you're going to get locked up. You may even be executed if you're convicted of a crime. But I don't see how you can say that an entire group of people could be denied their religious freedoms in this country because of what it says in the Quran, unless they go out and they carry out criminal acts or terrorist acts against people based on that. Are you suggesting that we should tell people that people who follow Islam are not welcome in America? Because that would turn one of the most fundamental beliefs of Americans on its head, and that is that everyone in this country has the right to believe in whatever religion they want to believe in, or no religion at all, and that we don't have a right to lock people out simply based on religion.
What about the threat factor? I mean, if I
when you say threat factor, what does that mean? Because the fact that somebody says, I'm a follower of Islam, until and unless he says, and I'm going to kill people because of my beliefs in Islam, what threat does he pose? Would you propose that we ban Islam from the United States? Because that's not going to be constitutional. I don't think ever.
Well, the threat's still there. I can't just walk up to somebody and say, I don't like you, I'm going to kill you. I would be in jail.
Well, if somebody walks up to you and threatens to kill you, that's a crime in every community in America. But if somebody simply says, I believe in a religion that is hundreds of years old, not as old as Christianity or Judaism,
right.
And they say, because I believe in it, you're going to tell me that I should be either kicked out of the country or imprisoned? No. Can't do that.
Right. I see the threat. Maybe you don't. I do.
Well, no, I see the threat. But what you're telling me is every single person who says they're a follower of Islam, I know people who are Muslims. Do I consider them a threat? No. Do I think our country should be careful about allowing people in from countries that have a lot of terrorist activity going on in them? Absolutely, yes. So don't lay that one on me, because, Lee, I won't take it. When you say you don't see the threat, I see the threat. But you're saying every follower of Islam, so you believe that all 7 million American Muslims are an active threat to you right now, right?
Well, if they follow their Quran, yes.
Yeah, but that's the if. That's the important if. The day comes that they say, we're going to go out and start killing infidels, I'm fine with locking up anyone who threatens to kill people based on their religious beliefs. But until that happens, you've got no cause to say lock these people out or lock them up. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and always a pleasure to welcome back to the program from the eastern side of Washington State, Kathy McMorris Rogers, member of Congress, a Republican from Spokane, and the chair of the House GOP. Congresswoman McMorris Rogers, thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks, Lars. It's good to be with you.
And the big work you got done today, the House got done today, was passing the National Defense Authorization Act, otherwise known as the Pentagon budget, right?
Well, it is true. It's the one that sets the priorities for the Department of Defense, and this is Congress really directing the Department of Defense through the authorization. And I think I've talked to you before about the importance of Congress addressing unauthorized programs. This is one in which Congress has consistently, for the last 57 years, we have done this authorization. We need to do it throughout the federal government, but it is the opportunity for us to go through the entire Department of Defense and tell them what the priorities are. But it also was our opportunity as Republicans to say, this is our top priority. We need to rebuild this military. Over the last 5 years, we've seen huge cuts to the military. And we need to rebuild the military. They're being asked to do more with less. It's impacting readiness at the very time that we have more threats around the world. You see, and you hear it in the news every day, whether it's North Korea or Russia or Iran, Syria. There's a lot going on, and our military needs to have the support. They need to have the equipment. It also included a pay increase for our troops, the largest in 5 years. So it was. I was pleased to support it today. I'm proud to represent the men and women who serve from Fairchild Air Force Base.
Congresswoman, one of the things that's notable, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, this will be the first National Defense Authorization Act in 8 years that hasn't faced an automatic threat of a veto from the White House.
This is a White House who has partnered with us. This is a priority for us as Republicans. It's the number one responsibility of the federal government to keep this country safe. And we're so grateful for those who serve in the military. But just think about recent activities. You know, just earlier this week, the tanker that went down with the Marines. And we have other incidences where, it's raising questions as to aircraft. We have too many, the Air Force has said, you know, they have a lot of planes that they can't even fly because we aren't keeping up with maintenance and with our equipment. We want our men and women to have the best equipment possible, and we need to make sure that we are giving them that support. Just this week, we had General Everhart come and meet with the Air Mobility Caucus, which I co-chair, but I represent Fairchild. Fairchild is the largest tanker base in the country, and it is basically the gas stations in the sky. So the way that we get our military men and women around the world is by these tankers. And, you know, these are tankers that are 50, 60 years old, and yet we keep maintaining, and we need to get them replaced. We need to make sure that our men and women have the support, the equipment, and we're giving them the best tools possible to do the job that we're asking them to do.
One of the other big issues that you're taking on is the question that people are trying to persuade folks that the Snake River dams and other dams on the Columbia River system need to be breached. What kind of insanity is this?
Well, this is a huge battle that is underway. And as for the Pacific Northwest, the Columbia Snake River system transformed our region from what was a dry, barren region, sagebrush, to one of the most productive agriculture regions. You think about irrigation, you think about flood control, the barging of goods up and down the river, but low-cost hydropower, clean, renewable, reliable hydropower. And yes, there are those that are embarked on the campaign to remove the four lower Snake River dams. So the Endangered Species Act requires a biological opinion. It's basically a plan as to how are you going to recover a specific species. And the biological opinion, we've been working on this since the mid-90s to get this biological opinion, this plan approved. Judge Simon, judge out of Portland, just earlier this year, throughout our latest draft, the latest proposal that had been worked on for years under the Obama administration. Three states that supported it, seven tribes, public power, other stakeholders, broad support for this plan, and yet one judge threw it out and set us back many years. And so I've introduced legislation. It's bipartisan. It has Republicans and Democrat support that is saying, we need to put that biological opinion, that plan, into law. That's the way to counter the ruling from the judge and for us to exercise our authority that this is a decision that Congress needs to make. And I also, Lars, I think it's important for people to know we are seeing record salmon returns, record fish returns up the Columbia Snake River system because of fish ladders and improved technology. It's really great to see the fish returns, and fish and dams can coexist. And we need to support this system and not be adding additional costs and additional burdens on a system that is functioning and serves such an important role for our region.
Well, Congresswoman McMorris Rodgers, I'm not sure you want to take a position on this yet, but my position on the legislation you're going to vote on about wiping out some of these California sea lions, these invasive species that are coming into the rivers and eating up the salmon and eating them like pigs. I mean, these sea lions will take one big bite out of the belly of a salmon and toss the rest of it, and they've been decimating the salmon. And now I guess there's going to be legislation before the Congress to expand the removal of these sea lions, not by, you know, trying to talk nice to them or, you know, throw some scary noises at them, but actually go out and take them out, you know, kill them. And I understand Absolutely. The Congress is going to vote on that. Are you in favor of that?
I am in favor. I'm actually one of the sponsors of the legislation. That is legislation that my colleague out of Vancouver, Jamie Hura Butler, has introduced. She's been working on it for several years. And I'm hopeful that we will be able to vote on that legislation very soon. It's just common sense that we would be able to take action against the sea lions that are eating the endangered salmon before they even start their journey up the river.
Tell your colleague Nancy Pelosi she can have her California sea lions back. What do you think?
Yeah, we'll send them all down to San Francisco.
Hey, I understand you met with the vice president recently. What was that like, and what did you get accomplished?
Well, I had the chance to sit down with him this week. He was on Capitol Hill. So when I was elected vice chair of the conference, first elected to leadership in the House for the Republicans, Mike Pence was chairman of the conference. And through, you know, he became a very good friend. He was a former conservative talk radio host, Lars. And then, and it was a time when I decided we needed to do more on the social media, on the digital front. And we partnered in that effort. And we've remained very good friends. I greatly admire him. He's a strong man of faith, and I'm proud now that he's vice president. We sat down. We were talking a variety of issues. Top of mind certainly is health care and next steps in the Senate, what that looks like after, you know, it gets out of the Senate through the House. I also invited him to come out to Eastern Washington, visit Fairchild Air Force Base, and spend some time in the Great Northwest.
We used to be able to get him on occasionally back when he was in the Congress. Now, of course, when he became governor of Indiana and then as vice president, of course, he's got a much fuller dance card. But I would love to see that happen as well. Listen, about the healthcare business, though, I want to tell you, I think my frustration is shared by a lot of American conservatives. America sent a message last November with Donald Trump and with the down ballot races that it said, we're not giving this to the Democrats, we're giving it to the Republicans, we want something done. And I heard years of promises that, you know, we've passed all these repeals, sometimes even a full repeal, not just through the House, and we've had all these practice votes. And with all that practice, why is it we can't get it done this year?
We got to get it done. I believe that we must get it done. And the bill that is before the Senate right now, it's not a perfect bill, but it largely repeals Obamacare and it starts taking the important steps to replace Obamacare. And I believe this is a time for action. This is a moment. We have an opportunity here, but it's every day that goes by that we're not getting it done. We're losing that opportunity, and we must take action to repeal and replace Obamacare. We see every day where it continues to be failing people, individuals, families all across this country. The premium increases, the number of counties that only have one plan available to them, 41% now in the country. So we must take this action, and this is just a first step. This is to repeal. Start taking the next steps, but the House has already taken action on medical liability reform, the number one cost driver. There's a lot more to health care reform than the bill that passed the House and is now before the Senate. There's other reforms that get at the cost drivers, transparency, accountability, and choice, allowing people to go across state lines to purchase health insurance. That needs to come. The association health plans. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price will be taking administrative action over 1,400 different rules that were put in place at Health and Human Services under the Affordable Care Act. So there's a lot. It's very complicated. There's a lot to it, but this bill in the Senate is the first step, and they must get it done.
Congresswoman, it's a pleasure to have you on. We'll have you on again, and just stay busy back there because we want to see a lot of work get done, and I was glad to see that Mitch McConnell decided to keep your colleagues in the Senate into the middle of August, which is no fun in Washington, D.C., but they need to get their work done before they go home. Thanks so much for the time today.
And Lars, know that the House is on track, and one of the other things that is going on in the Senate is that the confirmations are held up. They confirmed a judge this week, 100 votes to zero, and yet it required 30 hours of debate in the Senate. Those are the games that the Democrats are playing.
30 hours of debate to get a 100-0 vote in favor of a confirmation. Exactly. That's crazy. Yes. Congresswoman, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Keep in touch.
You bet. Kathy McMorris Rogers, who represents the Spokane area in the Congress, back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday. It's live on the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the day we celebrate your First Amendment freedom to sound off on whatever you want to talk about. And as usual, naysayers go to the head of the line. Our quick poll brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Should the Congress sign off on killing more California sea lions to protect Northwest fish? The story is that if the legislation is approved by the Congress, sponsored in part by Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers, who is just on with me, as many as 900 California sea lions might be taken out, killed, instead of this, let's see if we can scare them away from the fish nonsense that doesn't work. That stuff is crazy. And as far as I'm concerned, this invasive species of California sea lions, Take them out before they really do more damage to Northwest salmon. Let's go to naysayer Cassidy, who's calling in. Cassidy, what do you and I disagree about?
Hey, Lars, how you doing today?
Doing well.
Listener. Sorry I'm calling in for my first time as a naysayer, but...
no worries.
Usually I agree with you on 90% of everything. Just, you were talking yesterday about the decriminalization of heroin and how it's a bad thing and hurts the addict, right?
Yep.
All right, so the point I wanted to make is heroin is an all-consuming, all-powerful, very destructive disease. Not disease, but problem that people are going to have.
It's an addiction. Now, let's call it what it is. It's an addiction. A problem is when you forget to gas up your car. It's an addiction.
You're right. It's not a problem. It's an addiction. So, look, we have this all-consuming thing, and now we have it as a felony. We're used to now. Now, we know that 80% of the people that go into this felony program fail, and they end up getting a felony.
That's true.
On the record. For the rest of their life, 80%. So I would say that is not a success.
But you save 20%. Now, if we decriminalize it, you're going to save zero.
Wrong. Because the fact of the matter is, the threat of a felony is not what gets somebody clean. 20% of the time, sure, it works. But what gets a person clean is when they decide that they're tired of being a lowlife, tired of being a loser, and they decide that they want a better life.
Well, that's another way. No, Cassidy, that is another way.
Let me just finish, Lars.
All right, finish up.
All right, so how does it help the addict for when he does finally decide that he wants a better life and he wants to get clean? Now he has a felony.
No, you are misstating it. If today on the streets of Spokane or Seattle or Portland or Eugene, there is an addict who's been sticking the needle in his arm, and he says, I want to get clean. And he walks in and says, I want to sign up for Medicaid, which is the tax. Hold on, hold on.
I don't have Medicaid.
Hold on. But if you're poor, if you have no money and you have no health care, you can sign up for Medicaid and go in and get drug treatment. You don't get a felony for that. So the person who voluntarily says, I want to quit, he gets a pass. He's not even going to be accused of a felony. What I'm saying is, now that Oregon has decided to decriminalize it, then the drug court system, where they say to addicts, you've been caught with drugs, you're going to get a felony unless you go into treatment, encourages a number of people to get to treatment.
Only
that they
20%.
Well, no, only 20% are going to succeed.
Marginal. It's not enough to give everybody else a felony. Because then all these people have felonies and it's harder to get a job. Life is infinitely harder. And I don't think that a 20% success rate is, you know, that's worth it when everybody else.
Cassidy, can I ask you a couple of quick questions? We're 30 seconds from the end of the hour. Do you have a felony?
I do, Lars.
Okay.
We're
going to burn up all the time. If having a felony is something most people try to avoid, then keeping the felony treatment of heroin is one way to discourage people from using heroin. Now that we've taken the felony
everybody already knows they're not supposed to do heroin, Lars, right?
No, because the state of Oregon just said it's okay to do heroin, that there's a minor punishment for doing it. Cassidy, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Back in just a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show.